Welcome to the Settle Cane Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, broadcasting from the Aorta of America, beautiful festival city, Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where we pump out reason and pierce through the propaganda. Here we go. Today is Sunday, May 7th, 2023, and this is episode 50 of the Subtle Cane Podcast. Believe it or not, Synchronicity Part 2. If this is your first time with the Subtle Cane Podcast, thank you for gracing us with your virtual presence. If you're a returning listener, thank you for your continued support. It is much appreciated. All right, we're going to jump right back into the topic of propaganda today. Last episode, we reviewed some common techniques used by propagandists to influence thoughts and ultimately behaviors, and we started examining the French philosopher Jacques Ellul's take on the subject matter. This is obviously complex and nuanced material, and I would really encourage you all to dig deeper by taking the time to read through some of the suggested materials and going back to listen to previous episodes that I've released on the topic. I'm also going to have links in the show notes to some other resources that I've found to be helpful. And I know that my regular producers will be familiar with the veritable one-stop shop that is CorbettReport.com. James Corbett has compiled a ton of research on a variety of topics, but one that he's done a really good job and a very thorough job of covering is propaganda. And the best part about what he does is he saves all of his receipts. What I mean by that isn't just him sharing his opinion, but if he mentions something of note, you can bet that there's a hyperlink with the original source. We'll be hearing again from him very soon. Words and images are powerful tools that our human minds latch onto and internalize. Ellul notes that the psychological elements most favorable to propaganda are symbols and stereotypes. And the burgeoning field of narrative psychology scientifically confirms what the myths and legends have historically taught us about the way we perceive reality. I think it's crucial that we understand how words and images are used to shape our minds and society in general. We're going to get further into symbols and stereotypes and mass society as we progress in order to fully appreciate the synchronicity of modern propaganda in this series. The war on our minds looms large and is no small piece of the complicated puzzle that we call humanity. I don't use the word war to be intentionally inflammatory, just relatively accurate. So let's get back into our examination of propaganda, one of the most nefarious tools in the hands of the ignoble. Ellul, as I stated earlier, divided and classified propaganda in some interesting and insightful ways. Let's start by breaking down some of his ideas. We're going to look at propaganda of agitation and propaganda of integration in this episode. And going further, we'll look at vertical and horizontal propaganda, as well as that synchronization that I've been talking about. But these will be a good launch point for the hypothesis that technological advances in mass and social media have allowed for a synthesis of sorts to occur, which, if we hold true to our war on the mind metaphor, is tantamount to a tactical nuke. Gotta take hope, because our willingness to confront the matter is tantamount to building ourselves a psychological bunker. All right, so we better get into it before I get out of hand with these metaphors. Next thing you know, they'll be drinking tequila and running around topless. What is propaganda of agitation? It's used to establish a new order, in Ellul's words. And that sounds relatively familiar, doesn't it? New order, new world order, great reset. Propaganda of agitation calls upon the lowest common denominators in a society and preys upon their insecurities, preys upon the actual or manufactured injustices that they experience, and their emotions to fuel the fires of revolution. Now, when I say the lowest common denominators in a society, that isn't a statement about their value as human beings. That should go without saying, really, but I want to clarify for the sake of posterity. What I'm referring to is people with less education, formal or informal, and then young and the naive, and people who just kind of scrape by through life and don't think too much about it. They're fertile ground for resentment. You find a group of people who are marginalized or at least made to believe that they're being marginalized, and you have a great starting point. If you look at, let's say, Maoist China or the Soviet Union or post-World War Germany, you're going to have some historical examples of how propaganda of agitation was used. For, let's say, a more modern outlook, you can look to the United States as well as many of the Western European countries. You can look at the racial divisiveness that's been fomented, the LGBTQIA plus agenda, and Antifa are examples. They aren't just on the left either. We got to remember that. They aren't just on the left. But they are, predominantly, they are Marxist in nature, from what I've seen. Alul says this, quote, "It is led by a party seeking to destroy the government or the established order." He also says that, quote, "Governments also employ this propaganda of agitation when, after having been installed in power, they want to pursue a revolutionary course of action," end quote. That brings to mind some recent examples. As I said, the World Economic Forum's Build Back Better, Great Reset. You got Obama's Hope and Change. Or how about this? Trump's MAGA. Oh, not that one, right? I know there are those of you who don't like Trump being lumped in with the others. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably friggin' propaganda, people. Remember, it's predominantly Marxist, but not exclusively. It's subversive and has the stamp of opposition. It causes agitation and division. We have to be able to set aside our implicit biases. Look at, let's say we're talking about Trump. What about name-calling propaganda or glittering generalities propaganda? I could keep going, but I think you get the picture. Propaganda of agitation is binary in nature, and it feeds upon the resentments and emotions of the public. It's the spark that sets the kindling to fire. That is, it is now and has been used by both conservative and liberal parties. If you're so inclined to believe that there's really a two-party system, I personally think it's more of a uniparty with oppositional talking points that always seem to end with the same results, being more war, more taxes, and more governmental power over us, the people. They might take different roads to get there, but they both appear to end up in the same place, standing on the backs of us, the people they're supposed to serve. Propaganda of agitation is all about radical change. It's a fire starter. James 3:5 says this, quote, "So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire." I thought that an apt quote. Now, perhaps the most blatant example of propaganda of agitation from recent history is the hysteria drummed up about what we now refer to as COVID, or just the pandemic. Let me read you a passage from Alul's book, again, written in 1962, and see if this rings any bells or makes you think of anything you've gone through over the last couple years. Quote, "In all cases, propaganda of agitation tries to stretch energies to the utmost, obtain substantial sacrifices, lockdowns, masking, vaccine mandates, and induce the individual to bear heavy ordeals. We're all in this together. We're all going to die. Death toll counters on the side of the screens. It takes him out of his everyday life, his normal framework. How about lockdowns and loss of contact with your family and your friends? Propaganda of agitation thus unleashes an explosive movement." Remember people raging out over masking and the unvaccinated? "It operates inside a crisis, or actually provokes the crisis itself. Lab leak? Specialists in agitation propaganda break up desired goals into a series of stages to be reached one by one. Remember 15 days to slow the spread, flatten the curve, color-coded infection zones, stage 3 lockdown, now you can buy groceries. There is a period of pressure to obtain some result, then a period of relaxation and rest. Thank God, no more masks. For now." I think I just described the last 3 years of our lives. Alul notes that the intense periods of pressure are only sustainable for so long before despair sets in. We endured a massive social experiment on an almost global scale. Different countries were subjected to a whole variety of pressures, from the relatively laid-back Swedish response to the downright tyrannical Australian response, and all manner of variations. And that might seem like a bold claim, but if you take into account the WHO's pandemic preparedness treaty, you'll see that there's a group of unelected officials from an organization that receives a majority of its funding from private industry and non-governmental organizations, and that they've convinced supposedly democratic nations to hand over their sovereignty in the name of public health. Now, I know the language has been softened a little bit in the latest iteration of the treaty. There's not much room for doubt, though, that the intended goal is unsurprisingly centralized power and management of the member states. I guess it's more of a shifting of the Overton window and a reassessed incrementalism that provides a thin veneer of retained sovereignty in the latest iteration. Okay, so you get the picture. It's the old Hegelian dialectic, problem, reaction, solution. Agitation propaganda intentionally causes or parasitically benefits from a crisis or a set of coinciding crises. Alul says this specifically about its longevity. Quote, the individual cannot be made to live in a state of perpetual enthusiasm and insecurity. After a certain amount of combat, he needs a respite and a familiar universe to which he is accustomed. Does that make sense? Like, it takes advantage of fear and hate, and it assigns scapegoats, and it offers solutions to problems that it has likely caused or at least contributed to, definitely benefited from. It turns brother against brother and divides and conquers. Resentment fuels the fire that burns down the existing structures to make way for new ones. COVID's one of many examples. I've included a link in the show notes here to states of emergency in the United States that I've gleaned from CorbettReport.com. I think you'd be surprised how many there are and actually how long they remain active. There's some remaining active today that are still, you need to check out the link. So propaganda of agitation has a limited shelf life. What happens when the dust settles? So if you whip everybody up into a frenzy so that they eagerly burn down buildings in their own neighborhoods, rise up against existing traditions and power structures, and introduce your new and improved plan for the world, what happens when you've accomplished your goals for the time being and you need to move forward? Well, if you happen to be the one that's agitating, at some point you're going to need to transition to your new normal. Where have we heard that before? That's where we introduce conversion propaganda. And it's used to quell the flames of agitation, and it distracts from the previous passions that have been provoked. Now, it can be done quite deftly with the technological tools at hand to date. Let's just say our attention spans aren't exactly what they were when Alul wrote this book. He portrayed it as a highly sensitive and difficult process, and perhaps it was when he wrote that book. But if we're honest, we have to admit society moves its focus now wherever the mass media and its influencers point the spotlight these days. Not a very long attention span. One day it's hot news, the next day it's nothing. That isn't always how it's been. It's not nearly as difficult to distract the general public these days. We're going to talk more about that in the next episode in this series, but let's take a short value for value break before moving on to the propaganda of integration, which is what needs to be used to create sort of a collectivist population of worker bees and drones. The Subtle Cane podcast is a value for value operation. That's why you hear no ads, no screeching pleas to act now. And I'm pleased to say that I've actually successfully launched the Give, Send, Go campaign. Not that it's that complicated, but Gen X and technology, it's a struggle. So for those of you who don't like PayPal or Venmo, you can now support this venture through the Christian fundraising site Give, Send, Go. Links are in the show notes. Please check it out. I'm also happy to report that there's been a $50 donation from an anonymous donor. Thank you very much. It's a huge lift, $50. That's a huge lift. And I really appreciate you investing in this endeavor and returning value for value in the form of your treasure. Time, talent, and or treasure are always welcome. I have loyal producers that regularly help me with their talent, and you're all very much appreciated for sharing your valuable time. Sincerely. Look, I get it. This program's free. You can listen and you'll never be charged for your time. So why give? Why give? The why has to do with what kind of a world you want to see and what kind of media you want to be able to have access to. I'm in this office, honestly, for hours and hours, reading, writing, and trying to put together something that will be a blessing to you. And first and foremost, that is what I want most, to be a blessing. But I do this because I care and because I want to bring information and questions to you that I believe are of a net benefit. The mainstream media and many on social media are motivated by profit, and they're motivated by their allegiance to whoever pays the bills. So my allegiance is to you, my producers. So please consider supporting the show. I am uncomfortable coming to you hat in hand like this, but your donations help show me that you believe in me. And I believe that you're generous and honest people who will come through for me. So it can be any amount, big or small, doesn't matter. It all makes a difference. Okay, good talk. Back to the lesson at hand. Propaganda of integration. Remember that I said people who are less educated and intellectual are more susceptible to propaganda of agitation. And it's sort of the inverse being true of propaganda of integration. Propaganda of integration is a long game, though. It moves the population into a state of collectivism. Once a mass has been formed, which we will talk about also in the future here about why the educated are actually the most susceptible to that. Once a mass has been formed, radical change has been established, and a new order has been adopted, there's a tenuous peace kind of obtained for a little while in that conversion propaganda. Now, I don't want to give the impression that these forms can't be simultaneously utilized. They are. And again, we have to account for the synchronicity that modern technology has made possible. But the propaganda of integration is the constant undercurrent that finds its way into curriculum, into pulpits. It's more subtle than agitation. Rather than the raging fire, it's the erosion of independent thought that insinuates itself into our lives through entertainment, social media, neurolinguistic programming, and the consolidation of acceptable thought. As I've said before, free speech is under attack. There are only several major media companies that own all the networks. The internet was actually the Wild West there for a little while in the beginning, but we're seeing more and more control over the results that were presented, even when we do online queries. How many of us actually take the time to really search for an answer when we're researching online? What I mean is that when you Google something or use whatever search engine you use, a pre-search or Bing at .io, you likely will see an astronomical amount of results, you know, like showing 1 through 10 of 5 million or something like that comes up. But how many of us take the time to look through more than the first couple pages of results, if not only the first couple results, before we accept whatever's thrown at us? And then you've got to take into account things like ChatGPT, where it's an example of what the future of searching online might look like. So you ask a question, it gives you an answer, as in an answer, one answer. And people will say, well, the AI says this is the answer, so I guess it must be the truth. Oh, look, it cited a government source. That's definitely got to be true. Integration propaganda relies on the internalization of the information presented. The internalization of the information presented and makes individuals each little propagandists amongst themselves. It's a positive feedback loop or a self-replicating virus, for another analogy. Adam Curry of the No Agenda podcast points out that this is kind of why TikTok is so successful, because its algorithm recognizes what you like, and it gives you more of that. It's also why the government and other social media companies hate it. They don't control it. Not in the same way as the government controls their competition. I think he has a strong argument. So I'm not saying that TikTok's a good thing. In fact, I think it's extremely divisive. But it sure gets the engagement and subsequently a lot of ad money, again, which is why their competition don't like them as much. So if you want to see purple-haired pansexuals scolding you about pronouns, come and get it. There's more where that came from. You want to see angry conservatives castigating Common Core curriculum? How's that for a tongue twister? All you can handle. The algorithm will dial into whatever you want, and it's an all-you-can-eat buffet serving your favorite foods 24/7. We got to ask ourselves what kind of additives are put in those foods to stretch the analogy. Probably too far. Integration propaganda needs compliance and collectivism to accomplish its goals. It's Maoist in nature. As in, when people internalize the ideas, they too become little propagandists. Like I said, they start sharing these ideas as if they're their own. In order to be effective, the information that's presented needs to be internalized. People are subversively influenced into believing that the thoughts and behaviors they are reinforcing and then subsequently enforcing on others comes from them. Eddie Bernays famously said this, quote, "If we understand the mechanism and motives of the group mind, it is now possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without them knowing it." End quote. He also said this, quote, "Propaganda is the executive arm of the invisible government." End quote. I think we need to think about that. I think it's an important thing to consider. So that's propaganda of integration. It's slow. It's an undercurrent. We see it constantly. It's all encompassing, and it gives you a total picture of what the world needs to look like. These are the set of beliefs that you should live by. These are the core principles by which you need to be making your decisions and forming your behavior from. And it has to be able to be flexible. So we see a lot of things being told to us that are contradictory. And that's part of the propagandistic tool. Because it isn't so much that it has to be true. It's that it has to be adhered to. And the more you adhere, the more you sacrifice your own intellectual individualism, your own autonomy, in order to stay in line with the propaganda of integration, the more integrated you become. This is why it has its name. And the more you become part of the collective, and that's how you identify yourself. That is where your identity comes from. A lot of talk about identity in the current culture. That's propaganda of integration. Look, I hope that this series is helpful and that I've been able to effectively convey some of these ideas to you in a way that makes sense. It's a very complex topic, and there's so many things that I'm sure that I should be sharing that I haven't. But if nothing else, I believe that you'll see how these tools are able to be utilized to much greater effect as we move forward, taking into account the advancements in the technologies of mass communication. We're going to continue to examine all this in the next episode in this series. And I say the next episode in this series because we have a friend of the show coming back to have a discussion about his series, Descent into Madness, next time we're going to get together. So I'm going to close with some thoughts that are tangentially connected to our topic, but I just think it needs to be said. Body, mind, and spirit. You hear that phrase thrown around quite a bit. I like to believe that our incarnate selves are reflections of our Creator. We are imagers of Him after all. That's what I believe. And perhaps you share that belief with me, perhaps not. I'd say statistically speaking, it's more likely that you at least believe in the transcendent over strict materialism that's just statistically reported around the world. So why do I bring that up? And what's the connection to propaganda? The reason I think this is important, the reason why I think it's connected, is because I believe that we're at war on all three fronts, body, mind, and spirit. Look at body. Big medicine, big pharma, and its dependence on pharmaceutical and surgical interventions. Big ag and its corruption and manipulation of our food sources and supply chains, along with all the endless additives and hormones and vaccines and all these things that we think we need to add to nature. We have big climate change. We have big oil. And the list goes on and on and on. But the agency capture and the corruption are just insidious and they're pervasive. And it shouldn't shock Americans in particular to know that we're about the sickest population around. It's all a bit overwhelming sometimes. And we're told that we can't even understand the difference between males and females at this point, and we're sterilizing our children when we're not outright murdering them as in the unborn. So there's a war on our bodies, on our mind. That's the focus of this series. And truthfully, you know, I spend a majority of this podcast tackling different issues of the mind in the form of questions and propositions. The war on our minds plays a major role in the successes of the war on our bodies and our souls. So we're made to believe that the assaults on our physical well-being are for our good or for the greater good, whatever that is. Remember Bernays, control and regiment the masses according to our will without them knowing it. A war on our minds. And then spirit, or should I say soul. The war for our souls is as old as humanity itself. But the good news is that it's already been won. Many people don't know it yet, and many are unwilling to accept it. Some think it's simplistic or naive, but I believe that the war for our souls was won by blood, that Jesus secured our victory, and that all we have to do is accept that victory by placing our trust in him, our Redeemer. Again, maybe you agree with me. Maybe you think I'm delusional or that the war for my mind has been lost to some archaic religious nonsense. I can accept that, but I hope you understand that I'm compelled to share my faith because my testimony bears witness to my salvation. And if I'm unwilling to share that with you, then I might as well just pack it up and call it a day because then I'm not really a Christ follower. Body, mind, and soul, war on all fronts. If you only ever take one thing away from this show, if you only ever take one thing, I hope that it's the message of the gospel. Our bodies are going to die, and our minds will be freed from the limitations set by them. Our souls will spend eternity either in the presence of our Creator or in the hell of separation from Him. And all the information in the world and all the clever arguments and all well-intentioned actions will mean nothing compared to the victory that we already have won in Christ. For all you listening, you are valued, you are loved, and you are worthy. God bless, and good night.
Back once the fire's lit, let the embers glow and be done with it. I'm startled by my lack of fear as the world I love turns to ashes here. And the dancing